to keep one's roots where they are. Even so, the soil may be very poor indeed. As we might expect, Hamsuns combines his cult of the hero and that of natural forces with praise for the vigor of youth per se. In comparison with this vigor, the restrained wisdom of maturity counts for little. The demand of youth for power is natural obedience to the law of life. Old age should not be revered for its own sake, for it merely restricts and hinders the progress of mankind. Even primitive people despise old age. Footnote 44. Text. And they emancipate themselves from it and its hindrances without further ado. Footnote 45. Text. He applies to human beings the lessons of biology, more precisely of botany, thus: And what have you learned from the woods? But what did I learn in the woods? That there are young trees there. Now the young stands behind me, ridiculed shamelessly and barbarously by every fool, simply because they are young. Footnote 46. Text. This resentful yet sentimental sermon is tied to an attack on leaders who are old enough to have learned from experience. One should not rely too much on the leaders. The country's youth should be our hope. Not a leader is apt to prove a broken reed. It is an old law that whenever a leader reaches a certain age, he pauses. Yes, he even turns right about face and pushes the other way. Then it is up to the young to march on, to drive him ahead or trample him down. Footnote 47. Text. Hamsun's heroes do not speak with such harsh frankness. He lends exultation to the rough tone of the young male in order to glorify manliness in general. He is happy that the peasant, reverent and serene as he is, knows how to bring his wife to her senses. To think that a man's hard grip could work such wonders. Footnote 48. Text. The myth of manliness is created out of natural qualities of superior force. Page 334. The Vagabond. Along with the peasant, the vagabond receives affectionate treatment in every period of Hamsun's career. August, his favorite, longs to shoot the knife out of the hand of a man who was trying to make off with his wallet, because that would be a thrill for the children of the age in their dreary existence. Footnote 49. Text. As a matter of fact, Hamsun seemed fascinated by such brutal mischief. And steal a bag of gold and silver plate from the market and hide it in the mountains so that a blue flame can float over the spot on autumn evenings. But don't come to me with three pairs of mittens and a side of bacon. Footnote 50. Text. In this pseudo-romantic flirting with nuisance crime, he ridicules the unheroic spirit of urban efficiency. No thunderbolt ever falls. Footnote 51. Text. He cries for gigantic demigods and blunders into a political program of violence. The great terrorist is greatest, the dimension, the immense level which can raise worlds. Footnote 52. Text. The peasant with his roots in the soil and the bohemian vagabond with no ties to anything may seem mutually exclusive idols. Still, Hamsun's ability to sympathize with such apparently opposite types has a certain logic. Their common denominator is the rejection of organized urban culture in favor of the application of raw, unmediated natural force. Incidentally, it was the socially uprooted literati, the armed bohemians, as they have been called, who performed the spadework of German fascism, playing up the cult of the hero and the maintenance of one's roots in the soil. In Hamsun's, the function of such marginal figures as the vagabond is emphatically different from that in the literal culture thus far discussed. From Cervantes through Ibsen, marginal characters have stood outside society and criticized it in the name of freedom and self-determination. In Hamsun, however, such figures serve as coquettish expression of his veneration of brutality and power. The relation of the sexes. The endorsement of violence and mischief seems to be a far cry from the theme of passive surrender to nature. But the connection between violence and passivity becomes unequivocal in Hamsun's treatment of the relation between the sexes. In his novels, there is a conspicuous absence of genuine yearning for love. When one of his characters is seized by a strong passion, it is quickly transformed into sadomasochistic torment of himself or of the partner. Page 335. This is as true of the desperate ecstasy of the hero in Hunger, or of the literally speechless and unexpressed affair between the main characters in Victoria, as of the mutual hatred of the partners in Pain. The hero of mysteries enjoys telling his beloved the most frightening and brutal stories. Footnote 53. Text. The hero of Pain shoots his dog and sends the corpse as a farewell gift to the beloved from whom he has become estranged. Footnote 54. Text. What passes for love is closer to hostility. Does she then love a dead man to the point of hatred and cruelty, and is she still trying to hurt him, or is Clan still alive, and does she want to continue her torture? Footnote 55. Text. In general, however, sadism is much less developed than masochism. People seem to find happiness only when subjected to strength, power, and authority. On occasion, one can readily observe the shift from sadism to masochism. Eva answers, "It was cruel of her to laugh at you." "No, it was not cruel of her. I cry. It was only right that she should laugh at me. Be quiet, devil take you, and leave me in peace. Do you hear?" And Eva, terrified, leaves me in peace. I look at her and repent my harsh words at once. I fall down before her, wringing my hands. "Go home, Eva. It is you I love most. It was only a jest. It is you I love." Footnote 56. Text. In one of his earliest novels, as well as in one of his last, a lover asks for harsh treatment. "Only you torture me too much with your forbearance. How can you put up with my having more than one eye? You ought to take the other. You ought to take both. You shouldn't allow me to walk along the street in peace and have a roof over my head." Footnote 57. Text. "Hurt me in return, do you hear? Otherwise you'll go off and believe I've been ruined by someone. But that isn't true." Footnote 58. Text. Page 336. Satisfaction in love seems possible only in the sexual sphere, and even then it is not, because sensual pleasure signifies any feelings of affection and identification, but on the contrary springs from malice and disdain, particularly for women. "Come and show where there is cloudberries," said Gustav. And how could a woman say no? Inger ran into her little room and was both earnest and religious for several minutes. But there was Gustav standing waiting outside. The world was at her heels, and all she did was to tidy her hair, look at herself carefully in the glass, and out again. And what did if she did? Who would not have done the same? Oh, women cannot tell one man from another, not always, not often. Footnote 59. Text. This spiteful eulogy of lust brings Hamsun back to his point of departure, the definition of a man as mere nature. In an early novel, promiscuity seems to thrive in gaiety and freedom. Iselin, I saw what you did, he says again. I saw you. And then her rich, glad laughter rings through the wood, and she goes off with him full of rejoicing from top to toe. And whither does she go? To the next mortal man, to a huntsman in the woods. Footnote 60, text. But even this cavalier concession to pleasure and satisfaction describes only another form of isolation, for there is complete lack of interest in the happiness of one's partner. Sexual relations are ruled by the laws of nature which men and women instinctively obey. There she goes, a human being like the rest of us, a wander in the earth, a little girl, ah me, a life gone astray, a flying seed. She was fairly undejected in her walk. She had the packet of papers under her arm. She knew what awaited her at the barn, and there she went. Some call it free will. Footnote 61, text. He broke through all rules and propriety and was very friendly, picked the hay from her bosom, brushed it from her knees, stroked, patted, threw his arms around her. Some call it free will. Footnote 62. Text. Whatever is distinctly human and spiritual is forgotten. Love, which for Cervantes and Shakespeare appeared as the key phenomenon in the autonomous development of modern men, becomes reduced in Hamsun to a bawdy cheer at free will.